Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Valentine's Day from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and boy, do we have an incredible Valentine's Day show like we always do for our listeners. We've got tonight a wonderful guest, actually two wonderful guests. I will move her from being co-host to a guest because it's Valentine's. And so we're just excited. I'm going to start by introducing, if I can get this last person. Yes, I'm going to start by introducing our panel of experts because we got some real wild cards tonight, and I'm so glad everybody is here. First of all, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, the one and only Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. Happy to be here. Happy Valentine's Day.
We are glad. Thank you. We're glad to have you here. And our man from West Hollywood, the one, the only, Devin Kate Strucker. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
I'm doing great. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone, and you know, congratulations to the LA Rams on the Super Bowl. I didn't watch it, but I heard everybody cheering all over town last night, and now they're changing the Hollywood sign to read Rams House temporarily. So it's a good feeling here in LA.
I'm sure there is. Well, that's great. We are certainly glad to hear you. As I tell everybody, we've got the Surgeon General with us. We've got the longest-running co-host of ScaryCast. And, of course, from Niagara Falls, Canada, that crazy dude from up there, up north, Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark? We are so glad you're here with us.
Excellent. I'm glad to be here with you guys as well. And I was just thinking while you were talking there, it was about just over 3 years ago when I was first on your show on Bigfoot and Company, and I believe She-Squatchers, Jen Cruz, was on that, and I remember it being a really good show, so I'm looking forward to tonight and hearing what she as well as Robin have to say tonight.
You know what? We always have a lot of fun on this show and all the other podcasts that we've done. Now, first of all, I will introduce our guest. I'm making her guest tonight, the one and only, one of the coolest Bigfoot experiencers that I know, one of my very closest friends, and the only person that knows my address, Robin Haynes McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I made sure I got your address. I've got it.
That's
in
right.
Both places.
So she,
I think we're good now.
If she doesn't hear from me by the end of the day, she's calling the cops to make sure I'm alive. But anyway, we're so glad to have you as a guest. Because you are one of our two
great to be here.
You are one of our two Valentines, and thanks for being here, and thanks for being with us every week on ScaryCast. And here she comes, one of my oldest and dearest friends in this paranormal world, the one and only She-Squatcher, the leader of the pack, and one of the coolest people that I know. And she and I have had many, how can I put it? We've had a few incidences that we've had to take care of, haven't we, Miss Jen Cruz?
Oh, you betcha. Hello, everyone. Happy Valentine's Day.
Well, happy Valentine's to you. We are so glad that you are here with us tonight. And so I will officially ask, on behalf of the guys here, on behalf of Devin, Dr. Trey Donaway, and Mark Johnston, Jen Cruz and Robin McCray, will you be the ScaryCast Valentines tonight?
Of course. Yes. Yes.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, we could not have had a more incredible answer from two of the most wonderful paranormal people that I know. I've known both of you for a long time. Jen and I came up through the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference and the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and I talk to Robin every day, except when she's too busy consulting with her. No, I talk to her every day. So anyway, thanks for being our ScaryCast Valentine.
Wants to scare me.
And pardon?
I said, except when you want to scare me. I don't hear from you.
Oh.
I go in panic mode.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay, I guess. I appreciate it. I'm glad someone goes into panic mode. All right. Now, tonight's topic, I asked Jen Cruz, about 10 days ago. I said, what do you want to talk about? She said, multiple universes. And then I think we jointly said, well, we probably need to include the Mandela effect. So, Jen, is that kind of how the conversation went?
Absolutely, it did. You know, I think that the majority of people have experienced the Mandela effect to one extreme or another, and maybe they're just not aware of it. Maybe they've never heard of the Mandela effect. But I personally think, you know, because what they define the Mandela effect, if you were to Google search, what is the Mandela effect? They're going to say that it's a group of people in mass that are remembering history wrong. They're remembering history wrong. But, you know, the funny thing is that people are remembering the same thing that they say is wrong. It didn't happen that way. And, you know, one of the ones that really sticks out for me that's a common one was from the James Bond movie, Moonraker. You know, where it's like, it had the big tall guy with the metal teeth. And there's this scene. Yeah, there's this scene in that movie where there's this young, she looks like a young college girl, and she's real cute, and he smiles. The sunlight just shines off the metal on his teeth, and she smiles back at him because she has a mouthful of braces, metal braces, and the light just catches off of her braces, and they have this moment. And it's just really kind of a sweet moment that they both have metal teeth. Well, now, if you were to go look at that, they say that that's not in there. She doesn't have braces at all. I'm like, that scene doesn't even make sense.
Oh, Jen Cruz,
she doesn't have braces.
That is absolutely wrong. When you mentioned that, I replayed it in my head. I saw how many of our co-hosts remember the braces to metal scene in Moonraker? Dr. Trey, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Mark Johnston, do you remember that one?
Yeah, classic James Bond. Was that the one with Jaws in it, the big dude?
Absolutely, absolutely it was.
Yeah, that was the one.
Yeah, I remember.
Devin Tate, do you remember that scene in Moonraker?
Well, this is embarrassing, but I've actually never seen any Bond movies.
That's okay. We'll forgive you. We still love you anyway. You're still our man
Thank
in West
you.
Hollywood. We couldn't have another one. All right. Robin McRae, do you remember that scene?
I didn't see that James Bond movie. The one I saw was The Spy Who Loved Me, but he was in that one as well.
He was?
Because I remember him biting the shark.
Yep.
You're talking about the big guy that had, like, the braces, the metal mouth?
Yeah, the metal mouth.
Yeah, Richard, his name is Richard Kiel. I could only remember that in the middle of Scarycast. But yeah,
that
but
was the only James Bond movie I saw.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. We still love you. Come on. But Jen, you're right. That's an interesting story. And
well, they say she didn't have braces on. And I'm like,
well,
she did. I specifically remember seeing it many, many times and thinking that's a sweet moment that they had that connection. And, you know, now they say that we're remembering that wrong. And, well, how can, I mean, thousands and thousands of people be remembering the same thing if it's wrong?
So if I can understand what you're saying, I just want to, can I cut in here and I just want to understand what you're saying. So are you saying that there's some inconsistency between what people remember and what actual, like, today is, and that's due to some crazy kind of effect going on?
Yes, and they call it the Mandela effect because the reason they named it that is that there's a massive amount of people that remember that Nelson Mandela died in prison, but then he was all of a sudden alive again. And so all the people that remember him dying said that they were wrong because he never died. But we're talking about massive amounts of people, and so now that we are all connected with this worldwide internet. And people can actually check into things and you know, we couldn't do that before. If somebody said you were wrong, you were wrong. There's not a whole lot you can do about that. You can't Google search and see what other people are saying about it. But now you do a simple Google search for Mandela effect, and it'll come up with the top 10 Mandela effects or the top 40. And masses of people are remembering things, the same exact thing that they're saying is not true nowadays. So now if you go and get that movie, The Moonraker, she apparently doesn't have braces in the movie. But she did in the movie that I saw many times.
Of course.
So what's happening there? They call it the Mandela effect, and they say that we're just remembering it wrong. But I think that's a bunch of hoopla, because if we were just remembering it wrong, we would be remembering lots of different things. It wouldn't be all the same memory, would it? That doesn't make sense. So there
seems
has
there's
to
a
be
pattern there
going on there. Yeah.
It seems there's a pattern going on. It's like some type of consistency between people's experiences, which you got to give some credit or validity to if that's what's actually happening.
And we're talking massive amounts of people that are remembering the same thing and are swearing up and down, no, that's how it happened. This is what happened. There's actually who was it that was supposed to be in a genie movie? I remember watching that genie movie.
Sinbad. Sinbad.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
They say
Shazam,
yeah,
I think it was called. Yeah.
Of course
they
that movie came
they, there was a movie called Shazam that came out by Sinbad. Everybody
yep.
remembers it, but then it never happened. But the thing is, are they confusing it with the Shaq movie? Because I believe Shaquille O'Neal was in a genie movie too. So you always got to think of, is it just some confusion, like a false memory because of something else they were remembering?
Well, that's possible. But there's a whole bunch of very specific things that people are remembering. Like, as a child, this might date me, but I had the Berenstain Bear books, the children's books, Berenstain Bears, and it was Berenstain.
Yeah.
It was S-T-E-I-N. And now it's Berenstain.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that
it was
Stein.
It was
yeah,
Stein.
That's what I remember, too.
Yeah.
I remember that, too.
Yeah.
But if you go look at it now, it's going to say Stain, Berenstain.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's all these things that, I mean, maybe you're not aware of all the different ones, but if you do a Google search for the most common or the top 10 Mandela effects, most people can relate to a high amount of them. So, you know, I thought about this a lot, and I thought, what's really going on here? Because I started experiencing changes in my personal life, too, memories of my own that wouldn't be corroborated by thousands of people. Online, but, you know, things like statues changing. And, you know, here's me going, why did they change the statue? And that nobody changed it. It's always been that way. And I'm like, no, it was not. So I think what's really happening here. Huh?
So I just want to interject, and I really want to hear what you're saying, but I also want to have a complete understanding before we move on. So I know something called the 100th monkey effect. Have you ever heard of that? Where, like, a groups of monkeys learn a specific behavior, and somehow it's passed between the groups, like beyond physical means. And there was experiments done in psychology that showed this. Is there some type of collective consciousness going on where if enough of us kind of follow this memory, that it kind of spreads, you know, beyond the normal, like in a collective conscious way between different people?
Yes, I have heard of that. There was actually a group of chimpanzees that were living on an island. And prior to this happening, they would always just pound the coconuts on rocks and take a long time to get it open, a lot of effort and a lot of work to get a coconut open. But one day, a chimpanzee on this island found a coconut that had landed in the water and had been sitting there for a while, and he picked it up, and he realized he could easily open this coconut. So he learned from that experience to start soaking his coconuts in water before attempting to open them, and the other chimpanzees on the island started to do the same. What was interesting is that this island, I think, was at least 50 miles away from the next island, and chimpanzees cannot swim. And it was like 2 months later, the chimpanzees on the next island started doing the same thing, and that just kept spreading out from there. And there was no contact between these chimpanzees. So they were just observing that the knowledge of how to open a coconut easier by soaking it in water was spreading through this mass consciousness. And I think that is a real thing, but I don't think that that's going to make up for memories that we have. Like, I watched that movie, I don't know how many times, because we had it on disc and we didn't have cable. So I watched our very limited selection of movies on repeat a lot.
Interesting.
So
one thing I want to add to that too, the 100th Monkey effect, is I believe when we discovered radio, it was like discovered between three people on other sides of the world all at the same time in the same year. And now you could say it's because of the accumulation of science that came to that point where it was able to be discovered. But it seemed like that was a weird thing in our history of technology, where we seem to have discovered things independently at the same time. And you got to wonder, is that something collective consciously going on there in our development?
It probably is. And I can tell you, and I would like to jump in here about Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, who is a brilliant man. He's a researcher from England. And in his book, A New Science of Life, his first book, he discussed the Welch mining town experiment. And the reason I want to talk about this is I want Dr. Trey Donaway to see if he knows anything about this experiment, maybe under a different name, and also Robin McCray, Haynes McCray. To see if she knows about it, along with Jen and just everybody. Because what happened is they took a bunch of ink blotches around to Welch mining towns, and they picked Welch mining towns in his book. In the book that I had that I can no longer find, he talked about the fact that Welch mining towns were not connected by any technology or telephones. So if they went and did this experiment in one town and did it in another one 40 miles away, there was a 0% chance that anybody had, had any connection or knew about it. And so what they did, they had these ink blots, and it's like they showed them to people, and nobody could see anything much. But then by the time 30 or 40 people had seen them, they all started seeing the same fairly abstract image in these ink blot photographs. Now, I don't know if anybody knows about this or has heard about it, but I mean, I surely didn't make it up. I mean, I'm not that smart, and I had to buy a new copy of A New Science of Life by Rupert Sheldrake because for some reason mine vanished, and it's not in there. I Googled the Welch mining town experiment up all over for years, and it just never shows up. And I don't understand why. And I guess this is a Mandela effect for me, is because I remember it very much. And then another one that I had, my dad took me out one on I think June the 23rd, and he said, son, look at this. It was like 9:30 at night. The sun had just gone down. And he said, this is what happens on this date. This is the longest day of the year. So then he comes back on December 21st, and I thought something was wrong. And he gets that. He said, son, you remember what we did back in the summer and saw the longest day of the year? I said, yes, Dad. And so he said, what time is it? He showed me his watch. I said, it's 4:30. I just learned how to tell time. And it was dark. It was getting very dark at 4:30 p.m. What a good dad. He showed me the difference between summer and winter and how long the days are. I mean, I can't thank my dad enough for being such a great dad. But that's what he did for me. And then I found out that is not the case now, because it gets dark at 8:30 at night in the middle of the summer. Well, that's really 7:30 at night because of daylight savings time. So I remember, and I called my aunt, the evil aunt, but I called her and asked her, I said, when does it get dark in the, and she said, about 5 o'clock. I said, well, when does it get dark in the winter, in the summertime? She said, about 9:30, 9:45. Even my aunt, the evil aunt, that I still love her, but, she's kind of crazy. But even she remembers times when, and I ask various people, and it seems like the older people remember the change in time. And I thought, when I realized that the sun was going down earlier, I thought, God, that'd be the biggest news on the planet. but apparently nobody noticed. So sorry. You know, so Jen, between Moonraker and between the fact that the sun goes down earlier, 2 hours earlier, there are strange things. Now, Dr. Trey Donaway, I'm going to pick on you, and then I'm going to pick on Robin, because I'm going to pick on every one of you. Can you think of something that you thought was true that apparently is not exactly right? Kind of like this Mandela effect. All right, now I'm going to go with it's a 10-point toss-up. That sounds like the GE College Bowl. 10-point toss-up, and I'm going to go with Robin McCray on that one. Do you remember something that's not the way it is today?
I'm trying to actually think. I'm sure there's been a multitude of things. I mean, really. You know, but I want the thing I wonder, like this, the whole Mandela effect thing. You know, of course, I always tend to go to the freaky side of everything anyway, because that's just what my life is. But there's a couple things. First of all, like when they were talking about the chimps and talking about people that, you know, they would see the same thing from another group of people that were miles and miles away and had no contact with each other. And the first thing that comes to my mind, and Jen knows of this too, because she deals with the Bigfoot, everything is telepathic. Okay, if you watch animals, even the deers, when they're out in herds, the way they maneuver, they all move in sync. They do it because they're telepathic. They don't have to be next to each other. You know, it's not just the cryptids. I mean, we mind speak all the time. John, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something to think about as far as how are all these people believing and thinking the same thing and not being together. Just kind of the weird and freaky side of it.
Yeah.
You know, have I ever witnessed something? Different things, like little things here and there. You know, and it's like, how can 30 people see the same thing and then it's still not correct? So, yeah, I don't know anything specific, but I know it's happened throughout my lifetime on and off.
If I can add on that a little bit, you know, what I think it comes down to is a fundamental question, which is the nature of our consciousness as it relates to reality. We normally think of reality, our consciousness is kind of, you know, confined in that. But what if reality itself is conscious? Everything being experienced is essentially, and reality itself is a conscious form. Then whatever happens in reality will be essentially stored in memory in reality, maybe in reality itself, but maybe in the planet. Maybe the planet has its own kind of record system in keeping, which then it communicates with us being, and we're in tune on that on a very frequency level. I'm just throwing it out there, but maybe there's something to that, like when you were mentioning with animals, like that there's something on an earth kind of vibrational system that where we're tapped into on a subconscious level, and maybe that affects our memories, our collective memory. Anyway.
Go ahead, John.
No, please go. Please go ahead.
Well, the other thing, and this isn't anything as in-depth as what everybody else has said, but, like, when you look at what goes on in our world, how many times do a group of people see the same thing, and then we're told from outside forces that never happened, so everybody thinks it didn't happen?
Yeah.
Okay, look at the UFOs. I have a video of a UFO over here by my house that MUFON themselves has declared as a Class 1 sighting. They're so excited about it, they can't stand it. And I've got the video and the photos. Now, we all saw it. There's a group of us that witnessed it. But then if you were to ask somebody else about it, well, it was never there. And I think that happens a lot. And then people are like, oh, well, we've just been now told, programmed, whatever, that it never happened. And it changes what everybody's belief is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, too, I don't want to talk too much here because you guys have a lot of great information. But from what we're starting to understand about quantum kind of things going on, which is beyond physical means, they're able to now, like, send signals and messages quantumly through things, and it has to do a lot with just general structures they're sending it through. And in our brain, we now realize that there's, like, these magnetic crystals and things that they're now tying to quantum. So perhaps there's something on a quantum level in our brains going on that is able to...
I believe that, yeah.
Yeah, like if there's these, like, I think they're magnetite crystals, I believe in the pineal gland or somewhere like that. And what they're, this is just hypothesis here, but if there is these things that we're beginning to understand what has to do with quantum and sending signals quantumly, like across a distance, then maybe there's some kind of structure in our brain that's like a, that's a, some kind of matrix system or structure, crystal structure that, that has this ability to send messages or signals into the quantum realm beyond space and time. Just throwing it out there.
Well, I'm going to say
well,
that. I'm sorry, who was that?
Well, go ahead,
is that Robin?
That's
no,
Ken.
No, I was going to say I am looking forward to the book Quantum for Dummies, because I'll tell you what, I've tried to read Dr. Feinstein's works and everything, and I cannot figure out what the heck they're talking about. I just really can't, and I'm looking forward to the quantum physics or quantum computing for dummies. And, you know, even as a computer scientist, which I still am, I can't figure this stuff out. It's just like, it's like about beyond me. Dr. Trey Donaway, do you have a memory that doesn't seem to still be accurate? I can't wait to hear
but,
this.
Yeah. You know, my daughter, my youngest daughter, misremembers constantly. I mean, she is convinced this is how things were, and they weren't. But she absolutely can misremember. So I guess the question for me, is it just in how our memories are held and how things can be confused, and more than one person can confuse it in the same way? Or is it truly some external force that's doing this? You know, you can. I've read about the Mandela effect, and I've read explanations about the Mandela effects. I will say that I saw something the other day in an article, and again, it wasn't quite clickbait on the internet, but it was an interesting theory. That when they're talking about migrating birds, how they can come back to the same location time and time again, and then the hypothesis was that the birds can somehow see magnetic lines visually. They can visualize these magnetic lines. Now, it hasn't been proven, but this is what the researchers were hypothesizing, and they're trying to figure out if there's something to that. So just because we can't explain something doesn't necessarily mean we have all the information that we need to explain something, but there are some things that we might just not have all the information, and if we had more information, then we could come up with a different way of looking at the world. And that's I'm open to all of that because –
Trey?
Yes, I'm rambling.
My understanding is that you're – are you a neurosurgeon? Are you a brain surgeon? Is that what you –
No.
Your designation?
No. I'm a general surgeon. No big
general
nerve,
surgeon, sorry.
No brain. Yeah.
I see. But
bones.
Imagine you're looking at the brain in all of its complexity. Imagine we have it open, dissected, and looking at it. Would it be weird to be like, okay, this is where this memory is in this just bundle of neurons, a memory perhaps that we never thought of in 40 years. Have you ever had those where you remember something 40 years ago that just comes to the surface and it's like, where was that the whole time? Is this in this bundle of nerves or is there something kind of else going on here? And from a psychological background like mine, that's what I'm kind of leading to, is that there is kind of a what I would call transpersonal kind of identity thing going on that we're tapped into. I don't know if it's the earth that we're tapped into or something else, but collective conscious. And because I just think the whole, what is a memory? And it just kind of blows my mind sometimes when you have these memories that like you haven't thought of in 30 years. And it's like, where was that the whole time? You know what I mean?
Well, I know, you know, one of the strongest memory triggers is scent. And I know that's true. I can smell my grandparents' house in Arkansas. It's a very I'd recognize it anywhere, and occasionally I will smell that. Now, is it a real smell, or is it just my brain telling me I smell? because whatever we experience sensory-wise is processed through our brain, which we don't understand. I mean, we have some general ideas better every year as more research is done in neurosciences, but still we don't know what does this, and we don't know all the neural pathways and those connections, but our memories are dynamic. When I was in medical school, I remember our first year, we had someone come in and they talked about hypnosis. And I was always fascinated by this. My dad was in the military. We were stationed in Turkey. When I was 6 months old, we moved to Turkey. And I spoke Turkish before I spoke English. My mom said one day, "Trey, look out the window, it's snowing." She said that in English. And I didn't do anything. And our Turkish maid, my mom taught in the little base school, so the Turkish maid said to me in Turkish, "Trey, look out the window, it's snowing." And I jumped up and ran to the window. My mom said to my dad, "Oh, we got problems here," because I could speak Turkish, but I couldn't speak English. And once we came back to the United States, we were transferred back, and the Turkish gradually faded from me, except when I was in, I don't know how old I was, but it was after I'd been speaking English for a long time. I fell, I hit my head, and all I did was speak Turkish. I didn't speak any English. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Really, really bizarre. And when we went to the doctor, said, "So what happened here?" And then I started speaking English again. That was just a weird happenstance.
That's
so
crazy.
When I was a first-year medical student, we had a hypnotist come, and he explained how hypnosis works and how he could use it. And I asked him after class, I said, "You know, I explained this to him." He says, "Really don't understand, but I can tell you, your mind and your memory, it's not a tape recorder. It's not like you can rewind it to a certain point." He said it's a dynamic thing. And like the saying, old saw goes, if you don't use it, you lose it. So our memories are pliable. And I think it's as the memory gets more and more distant, or we confabulate with something that was similar, but wasn't the exact same thing, and our memories can confuse those, which could go in one form of a scientific explanation of why there's a Mandela effect, or why Sinbad is in a movie or not in a movie. It's because it was something close enough, so our memories blend things that happened.
So
I think that's a good thing.
But I don't know, but I do know our memories are plastic. They are not rigid. It is not a tape recorder. And when you consider how neurotransmitters use chemicals in their neurotransmission, the mixture of chemicals, the concentration of released materials, all of this can affect our memories in ways that we can't even begin to comprehend.
Yeah.
So, Trey, memory is a big mystery.
Yeah, and Trey, I love your scientific input on that.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Mark.
No, you go ahead. That's my bad.
No, it's just it reminds me because, like, with the smells, I can remember stuff from when I was a kid from my grandmother who's been gone for almost 15 years different places that I was at in the woods that had a particular smell or whatever. And it's like all of a sudden, if I think about it, I can smell it.
Yep. And if I remember correctly, it has to do with the limbic system, which is kind of like our lizard brain. I mean, it's, brainstem stuff. It's a very specific area of memory is the smell, and that is something that really sticks with us for a long time. And I always find it very fascinating when all of a sudden I detect this smell, and it takes me exactly to where it's always been in my brain. And specifically,
it's like a trigger.
Yes, it's a trigger. And whatever causes that I actually can smell, or whatever chemical business is going on between my neurons that triggers that smell, I don't know. All we do is know the result of the sensory input, wherever it comes from. And then
I have an explanation for that.
That is early memory. Mm-hmm.
I have an explanation for that, which is memory, it's usually a recollection through association. For example, that's why mnemonics work so well. If you're studying for a big test and like you had to remember this word, if you were related to another word, then all of a sudden you memorize it better, correct? Through an association. So
yes.
Through different
yes.
sensory associations. And the other thing to mention on that is there's different types of memory. There's short-term memory. There's kind of a reflexive memory and long-term memory. You know, long-term memory, I think, is the one that's most kind of mysterious because, like what we're talking about, where does it come from? Where was it this whole time? I haven't thought about this person in 30 years, and all of a sudden something made me remember them in the situation again. So I think there's something that psychology has always tried to, you know, explain this, and I think it's one of the kind of mysteries that, you know, I don't think we really have an adequate explanation, to be honest, like what memory truly is as far as our modern paradigm of science goes.
Yeah, in this month in particular, I have been overwhelmed with memories. We had a couple from Colorado on January 3rd told us they were going to buy our house. We've lived in this house for 35 years, and I'm a collector of all sorts of things. And I had stuff that my mom brought and dropped off years ago, that stayed in the same bag she dropped it off. And I've had to process through everything in our house, deciding what to keep, what to give to Goodwill, and what to save. And so this month has been a very interesting memory month for me because I remembered things that if I didn't have the visual input of seeing something, I would have never remembered that I knew it at one time or another. You can imagine, 35 years, plus stuff that dated back to the time I was in high school and before. I've recently seen all this stuff in the last month, and it is literally and figuratively mind-boggling because of all these memories that I dredged up that I, without that stimulus, I would not have remembered that I knew it at one time.
And Trey, as somebody who knows the inner workings of the human body, when you look in it and things like, to me, it just is mind-boggling, like you're saying, that something like this that's just a bunch of chemicals and, pathways and things are able to store this and recall it the way that we are. It almost seems like there's something supernatural going on sometimes when it comes to consciousness in this regard.
Yeah, and you know, what I always find amazing as a surgeon is the body is so complex, and it has the capacity for self-healing, and yet most of the time, it works in just a phenomenally cool way to allow us to grow, to allow us to age, to allow us to remember, to allow us to forget. And of course, when you're looking at the body as a surgeon, you're looking not even at the cellular level, but you're just looking at the different parts that fit together so well and have evolved over eons of time to give us what we take for granted in our bodies every day. Well, that got pretty philosophical pretty fast, didn't it?
I think it's pretty relevant.
I'll have to say that That was a brilliant statement that you just made, and thank you for making it here on ScaryCast. And I want to get to Devin Tate. Do you have an experience that seems to be misremembered?
Yeah, I think I've mentioned it before to you, but first I just wanted to say, you know, it's really interesting, this conversation. I remember one of my first, like, frustrations in life was when I was a kid and I would ask my grandma questions, you know, about, like, how it used to be when she was a little girl, or, you know, things like when my dad was a kid, and she would say, oh, I can't remember. And I would think, why? Like, why can't you remember? Because, you know, being 5 or 6 years old, you know, I was fairly certain I remembered everything I had ever seen or experienced or had been told. And, you know, I feel pretty confident that I kept that feeling through most of my school years. Like, I even look back at projects I did in high school, like writing things where I would write, you know, when I was 10 years old, this happened. And when I was, you know, 12 years old, this happened. But then, you know, at some point, you know, we forget, you know, we really just don't remember all those things. So, but one thing I was fairly certain I remembered was that when I learned the word dilemma, you know, like when you have a choice to make, I learned that it was spelled D-I-L-E-M-N-A. And I always spelled it that way. And I mean, I took AP English. I took advanced writing classes in college. I was editor of the newspaper and yearbook. Always spelled it that way. Always remember seeing it spelled that way. And then in my 20s, I'm living in LA and computers have spell check now. And I type dilemma and it has that little red underline. And I'm like, well, what the hell is that little red underline for? Like, this is spelled right. And I look it up and no, it's M-M-A, not M-N-A. And I think, well, when the hell did that happen? Like, I always remember it being spelled that way. And then one day it just was spelled differently.
Wait, are you saying that dilemma has no N in it? That you thought it
Correct.
Did, but it doesn't? That's what I like when I was speaking, I'm like, it does have an N in it, doesn't it? So, wait, okay, I guess I'm on the same page mm-hmm. with you there.
It
yeah.
didn't in North Carolina. It was D-I-L-E-M-M-A.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it's weird because I so specifically remember learning it that way and seeing it spelled that way and, you know, and you know, even thinking, oh, this is kind of a tricky word. Like, you know, when you're a kid and you learn something and you think, oh, I'm smarter now because now I know this weird word is spelled this way. And then 10, 20 years later, you're like, oh, now all of a sudden it's not spelled that way anymore. Okay.
Interesting.
Well, Devin, that's something that brings back memories to probably a lot of us. And that was a wonderful example. And so what I would like to do, a really wonderful example, is the sponsorship of WLSC AM and FM, Loris and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Banana Jack's radio station. And we certainly appreciate being on ScaryCast is on. We are the true overnight of paranormal world. We are the true overnight on Saturday night, Sunday morning at midnight, and it's just great to be on ScaryCast having us there, and we're just so thrilled to be on WLSC AM and FM, Loris Myrtle Beach. Thanks to all of our listeners, and we do get some emails. Just send them to me, jwstamey@gmail.com, and thanks. So Jen Cruz, all I got to say is you have sparked more exciting content than I can remember in many, many weeks on ScaryCast.
Well, that's exciting. Well, the whole reason I wanted to talk about the Mandela Effect, but before I go into that, I'm just going to say I just did a quick Google search for dilemma, spelled D-I-L-E-M-N-A, and it brought up the first article that it brings up is dilemma, spelled with M-M-A, or dilemma, M-N-A, by Grammar Girl, Quick and Dirty Tips. It says, it's a form of collective misremembering when many people remember the same thing, and they're all wrong.
There you go.
So it's one of the Mandela effects. That is one of them. So,
that's a real politically correct
so
thing to say, isn't it?
It is.
Well,
one
you know,
so
I looked up dilemma also, and I see the I see where it originates. It was from the Latin die, and from the Greek, die, meaning to, and lemma, L-E-M-M-A, is, quote, an assumption, premise, derivative of lambenine, to take. I don't know what that means, but it's all the way back to the Greeks and the Latin where we get our word dilemma, and lemma was always spelled L-E-M-M-A according to the according to the Romans. So who knows?
Yeah, but you know, growing up in Kansas, I don't think they were teaching us anything about the original Latin. You know, I don't know how it happened, but I remember it only ever being spelled that way, and then all of a sudden nowadays it's only ever spelled this other way.
Well, it seems that there's a bit of a discrepancy between what our expectations of reality is and then what our actual reality is. And that's kind of a discrepancy. And in a way, that is kind of a dilemma. So if there is something supernatural going on, maybe this is the universe kind of communicating to us on a, in a word that we understand of what's going on. We got a dilemma in our memories or collective consciousness. There we go.
Exactly. Exactly. So
I love that.
The whole reason that I wanted to talk about the Mandela Effect in association with parallel universes or multiverse is because this was happening so much in my life, not just the random ones that people collectively remember, but very specific things were changing for me, and I'm talking on the daily, and sometimes 20 minutes apart. And it was I literally was feeling like I was going crazy. And at the time, I was going through my spiritual awakening. I was always intuitive, always psychic, but I had really tried to push it away most of my life. But there came a point in my life where I just couldn't anymore, and I just opened my arms and let it come. And I had a wonderful guide that helped me along the way, and he was my Native American elder. He kind of took me under his wing like a daughter. And he was the leader of the Mgéwin of our tribe, which is the Grand Medicine Society. People would consider them to be medicine men, although they don't call them that themselves that. They consider themselves to be spiritual advisors. And, all things mythological and just really paranormal and everything, things that he did really shocked me sometimes. He knew things that I never told him, but he was very specifically knowing it. And it just always blew me for a loop. But he was guiding me through this spiritual awakening, and he was also a mental health professional. He was a counselor full-time. So when I would call him and say, this is what's happening, I feel like I might be going crazy, am I okay? And he'd say, you're okay, just keep going. And he goes, I know that this is hard for you, but because it's hard for you, it's going to be easier for everybody else. You just have to keep going. Don't be afraid. Keep going. Push through it. And I did. And every time I called him thinking, I really feel like I might be losing it now because this is just nuts. I would explain it to him, and he would tell me that I was okay and I needed to keep going. And always the same thing. He said that it would be easier for everybody else because I was going through it. And in the end, I would always say, what does that mean anyway? I was so frustrated. I wanted some clear answers, And there was quite a few different scenarios that I was going through that were, sometimes breaking through what I call fear barriers and destroying fears that were beliefs in my mind. But there were also very, very real things. Like there was a statue, and it's a giant statue of a Native American woman. And it's placed in Thief River Falls in Minnesota, right by where the Thief River falls into the Red Lake River. And it's across the street from the Northlands College. And this road that you drive by, this area where the statue is, it's a park. And you have to drive over a bridge over the Thief River and then on to my aunt's house, which was just down the road from there. So we drove this road a lot. And I remember as a little girl, prior to being able to read, I asked my aunt to take me to that park because they had, playground equipment, and I really wanted to go there. We were always driving by it, and I'd never been to that park. So she took me there, and I walked up to this statue, and I'm looking up at it, and I see that there's words at the base of the statue. And I asked my aunt to please tell me, what does this say? And so she reads it to me, and it's all about this Indian maiden who literally, I'm part Native American, she was from my tribe, okay? So she's from our tribe. And she's telling me the story of it that's on the statue and how she, back in the day, they would, if they were washing their clothes or something in the water, in the river, they would either hang their babies in cradle boards from the trees. If the wind was blowing, it would rock the babies to sleep. And that's where the song Rock-a-Bye Baby comes from. Rock-a-Bye Baby on the Treetops that came from our tribe, hanging babies in the trees for the wind to rock them to sleep. And then if they were working in the water, sometimes they would tie the cradle board to the shore, and then the water would rock them to sleep, and they'd be right next to them as they worked in the water. And so she was washing clothes in the river, and she turns around, and her baby is gone. And they searched and searched for this baby, and they never could find it. And she spent her life at that river searching for her baby, and she was always demanding that the river stole her baby, and that's why the river was named Thief River, because it stole her baby. And she spent her life there waiting for the river to get her baby back. And this statue was erected in remembrance of her, and it was this giant, like huge, three-story statue of an Indian woman, and she had this empty papoose on her back. And she just had beautiful, beautiful paint that would signify the outfit, the regalia that she was wearing, wonderful, beautiful details in her hair, just a beautiful Indian maiden. And she was arrested there and was staring at the section where the Thief River falls into the Red Lake River. And so this story was just so moving to me that every time we drove past this, which was often because my aunt lives on the other side of that, I would look over, I would look at the statue, and I would say out loud, she's still waiting for the river to give her baby back. And every time we drove by there, I would say that out loud, and I would acknowledge her and honor her in memory of her. And so we're talking about me at 3-4 years old, and then on up till mid-30s. Every time I would go to my aunt's house and drive past this, I would, no matter how old I was, I would look over and say this. Now, mid-30s, I'm on my way to my aunt's house for a baby shower. My cousin's having a baby. And I'm driving by the park, and I look over, and I start to say, she's waiting for, and I see the statue that's there, and it's now a man. I slammed on the brakes, turned around, drove into the park, got out of my car, stomped over to the statue, and walked around it going, what the heck's going on here? It's still an Indian. It's still the same size. It's still staring at the river. It's still in the same location. But it doesn't look anything like the other statue any other way. It doesn't even have the same braids. It was completely different hair. There was nothing on his back. He's holding a tomahawk. And it's completely different. And so I look down at the base of the statue, and I start to read the words at the base, and it's talking about this being Chief Red Robe, but whose real name was Chief Moose Dung, and he was the chief of the tribe at that location. And it was a map of the whole area showing the original land of the people that was in the original treaty. And then it says that the white men stole this land from us, and so that's why this river was named the Thief River. And I'm like, that is not right. That is not right at all. Why did they? And it was an ugly. This statue is ugly in comparison to the other one. It was so plain. There was no detail. The other one was just simply beautiful and so detailed and so colorful. This one, he's wearing a red soldier's jacket. I mean, it's just like, this is all wrong. And so I get in my car, I go over to my aunt's house, and I demand them to tell me why they changed the statue. When did they change it? Why did they change it? And nobody there can remember anything about that statue being a woman. And I was like, no, this isn't something that I could have, like, misinterpreted. This is my whole life we're talking about here. I specifically, that meant a lot to me. That statue meant a lot to me. And I looked it up online, and I can find where they erected the statue in the early 1970s, and it was a man. And so these kinds of things were really tormenting me. Like, what is going on here? Because I know that that wasn't a man before. I started asking people.
Over what period of time did you recognize the statue as the original statue? Did you see it once and then it was changed, or did you see it multiple times and then it was changed?
All through my whole life to age 30, mid-30s, going to my aunt's house a lot. driving past it many times a year because for a while I actually lived there, so I was going there on the weekly. So, I mean, I saw the statue all the time, all the time. And so it wasn't just I saw it one time when I was a kid. No, I saw this all the time. And I remember just thinking how beautiful she was and how sad she was that she was still waiting for her baby to come back. And so this was a really, I mean, I knew for a fact that it wasn't a man before. I knew that. And so I was trying to figure out why nobody could remember it being a woman. So I started asking clients of mine who I found out went to Northland College, which is right across the street from that. I said, hey, if you went to Northland College up in Thief River? And they said, yeah. And I said, okay, well, do you remember the statue in the park across the road from there? They said, yeah. And I said, can you tell me about the statue? Can you describe the statue to me? And do you know the story that's connected with the statue? And they would tell me if they knew the story. And the majority of the people told me it was a man, that it was a Native man, and about the, you know, if they knew the story, it was about the land that was stolen by the white people, and that's why they named it the Thief River. But this is what's cool. Every once in a while, there would be a person who told me it was a woman and she had an empty papoose on her back and that the river stole her baby and she spent her life there waiting for the river to give her baby back. And digging further into that, that's actually a real story. That is a fact that happened there. And so there's actually stories about that from the tribe, about the woman who lost her baby to the river. And so it's interesting because I knew this one gentleman who is quite a bit younger than I am, and he went to Northland College. And I said, oh, okay, when did you graduate from Northland College? And he said, 2007. I said, okay, tell me about that statue. And he said it was a woman, and he remembered the story, and he just thought she was beautiful. And he said he spent a lot of time looking at it. He said it was so detailed and so beautiful. And it's such a moving story. And I was like, yes. And so then I told him, it's a man now. And he said, no way. I said, yeah, it is. And he didn't believe me. He did not believe me. So I'm finding people that remember what I remember and who remember it was a beautiful statue. And I showed him a picture of the statue that's there now, and he couldn't even believe that that would be the same thing. So it's really interesting. So I spent a lot of time trying to work through what's happening here. And it came to me that I was probably moving through parallel universes, flipping into one where something is slightly different. And the more I played with that idea, I found that it was true, and that I could do it on purpose. And this was just a weird, fun thought when I was working this out. I had a storage unit that I had the money to pay for the unit. I just had procrastinated getting it done because I hadn't driven over there to do it. And so I was 2 months behind on my payment. And, you know, I got the calls and I got the letters, and I'm like, yeah, I got to get over there. So I start driving over there. And it's literally 5 minutes to get there. And I'm driving over the bridge, and I'm thinking to myself, wouldn't it be fun if I got there and I didn't owe them anything? Wouldn't that be fun? And I just laughed at the silliness of it. And so I spent that 5 minutes that it took me to drive over there just focusing on how funny that would be if I got there and I didn't owe them anything anymore, because I'd slipped into a different parallel where I hadn't been late on my payment at all. And I really was laughing at myself at how silly this idea was. But I just played it through, and I got there, and I went up to the counter, and I said, hey, I'm here to pay for my storage unit. Sorry that I'm late. I totally was just blowing it off. I'm sorry. And she said, well, which number is your unit? I said, number 8. And so she looks it up, and she says, which facility? I said, this one. And she says, are you sure? Which number? I said, 8. And she goes, are you sure? Because I'm seeing this one is 2 months ahead. And I literally cracked up laughing. And I'm like, seriously? She's like, yeah. Is it wrong? I said, nope. It's not wrong at all. And I happily walked out of there. And I just thought, wow, that's so awesome. And so the more I found that if I played with it, if it came from a joyous, if it was a thought and an emotion that matched, and then those two things together were powerful. And it was interesting because I had had experiences where out of frustration, I yelled at somebody about, you know, you didn't know about this book 20 minutes ago. Where was this book 20 minutes ago that you now read last week? And and tell me about this or tell me about that. And then all of a sudden they'd be telling me about that, which they didn't know about before. And so I was slipping in and out. And it was really throwing me off. And I was talking to my native elder about it. And he just kept saying, just keep going. I know that this is hard for you, but because it's hard for you, it's going to be easier for everybody else once you figure it out. And so I think that there was this movie that came out, and what, I don't remember the year it came out, maybe 2004 or 2006, maybe, The Secret. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
The movie The Secret? Okay. So they're talking about how you can, the law of attraction, and you can bring things into your life. And so when I first saw that, I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to magically manifest this into my life. I'm going to magically, and I just thought, yeah, whatever. And, but, you know, I could see how some of it was working and whatever. But as I went through this other event where I was feeling like I was slipping in and out of different parallel universes where something had changed, and that noticing that something had changed was like my clue that I have moved. And so then I started thinking about The Secret and how when I thought about something and I held the matching emotion, and if that emotion was a powerful emotion, then it actually happened, and it was more likely to happen. So I think it also has to do with the energy frequency that you're holding yourself in. If you're holding yourself at a higher vibration, it's a lot easier to do rather than in a low level vibration. It's harder to do. And I think that's somewhat to protect us from moving into something that would be worse for us. Because, you know, if we're depressed and we're thinking about all the stuff that's been happening, if we immediately moved into that was in alignment with that would be quite dangerous for us. We'd be putting ourselves into a lot of hurtful situations. So I think it's kind of a good thing that it doesn't happen as easily in a lower level vibration when you're feeling sad or depressed or angry.
Yeah.
And Robin McRae, Mark, one thing. Robin McRae,
sure.
You're the queen of vibrations. You talk about how vibrations,
yeah,
rule the universe. Do you have any, I would love to get your comments about this.
Well, it is. The thing of it is the higher your vibration, your energy level, the more you can do. I mean, when you look at the cryptids, that's how they cloak. They raise the vibration so they can bend the light, and then you can't see them even when they're standing in front of you. Everything you do and everything we do is based on your energy and your vibration. That's how you do anything. So is it possible to go to different planes, to go to different dimensions or whatever with the higher vibration? Absolutely. When the portals open and, you know, these cryptids go through the portals, they're only able to do it because their energy and their vibration level is so high. So it really does. I mean, it's a game changer. It changes everything. Everything we do, everything we, you know, even in our lives, when you have a higher energy and a higher vibration, you will find your life starts to turn around. I mean, unless something's trying to bring it down, then it makes it harder. But on an average basis, you can, you know, manifest, just like what Jen was talking about at the storage unit, you can manifest in your mind what different things. You know, and like the people that I work with and I teach and stuff, and I tell them the same thing. You know, when they do any healing, when they get their vibration up, their energy up, if you can manifest it in your mind, that's what you need to do. And
you know,
I want to say this before I get to everybody else. This morning on the Transamerica training, Chris Jones, some people love him, some people hate him. He is the top manager in all of Transamerica, in the entire world. And he said the coolest thing, and I think it is so important to what we're talking about. He said, you know, your clients, the people you go see, you can't sell anything to them. But they're also the same people that you sell everything to. It's just how you look at it. So he's talking about this same topic. He said, yeah, you can't sell anything to them. Well, they're the same people that somebody else can sell everything to. So it's very interesting how this works and how this, what we call reality, works. I mean, if we believe one thing, it's going to happen. If we believe something else, it's going to happen. You can believe our Valentines. I want to ask you a quick question. Can you believe something good into existence, and can you believe something bad into existence? Jen Cruz, do you agree with that statement?
Yes, you can. But I think, John, it's more than just manifesting. I think that these things already exist in parallel universes, that they literally are thin like paper and they're stacked on top of each other, and that literally everything that could have happened did happen somewhere in these parallel universes, and that we can slip into the others. And we can slip into the others quite easily, and I think that's what's happening with the Mandela effect. There's a group of us that remember the Moonraker having the girl having braces, and we've slipped into a parallel where she didn't have them. And so there's a group of us that remember it very specifically, and then there's the movie that says, no, it didn't happen. And there's all kinds of things like the Berenstain Bears books. You can look it up. They are the Berenstain books now, but I specifically remember how they were spelled. Lots of different things. I encourage everybody to look up the Mandela Effect and to look at the list of the common ones that people agree upon. And see what you see there that you can relate to, because once you start seeing this stuff, if you start looking for it, like I can move now through these parallels with other people, and so I'll give you an example. I was my mom was engaged to a lovely gentleman, and he took very good care of her. And she decided she needed to have all of her teeth pulled out. So they pulled all of her teeth, top and bottom, all of her remaining teeth. She was going to get full dentures. And this was the whole reason why she couldn't come to one of my events that was local, that was a huge event that I was going to be speaking at. She couldn't come because she was just recovering from having her teeth pulled. And I remember saying to my mom, and this is funny because we joked about it, you know, I don't even know that I want to say it on the radio, but there was a joke about a woman not having any teeth, and I made her show me that she didn't have any. So I looked in her mouth, and, you know, we joked about it. And then a period of time later happened, and her fiancé died. And then I spent a lot more time with my mom after he died because she needed somebody to be with her all the time. And so we were out for dinner with my boyfriend, and we were at a buffet, and my mom says, oh, I next week I'm having my teeth pulled. And I looked at her, and I said, what are you talking about? And she says, I'm having the rest of my teeth pulled out next week. And I said, Mom, you don't have any. Let me see. Show me. And, because I'm so used to this happening, things changing, I don't buck it very hard. I'm just like, show me. And she showed me that she still had teeth in her mouth, and I specifically know she didn't have any. And so I was like, okay, interesting. And she goes up to the buffet to get some more food, and my boyfriend says to me, I remember your mom having all of her teeth pulled out. They were all gone at Paracon, and that's why she couldn't come. I said, that's what I remember. And so a couple months later, I'm out to dinner with my daughter and my mother. And my daughter, she's an adult person, and she's always been very psychic and tried to push it away just like I did. And she says to me very nervously, she says, Mom, do you know anything about the Mandela Effect? And I said, yes, I do. Why? And I'm smiling. She looks uncomfortable, like I think I might be crazy. Uncomfortable. And I said, why? Are you experiencing changes? And she goes, yes, a lot. And I said, okay. I said, that's cool. And I started to tell her the story about my mom's teeth, but my mom is sitting right there. And I stopped myself because I just had this feeling come over me. And I said, no, ask my mom. I said, Mom, when you had all of your teeth pulled out and you had no teeth left in your mouth, was Daryl alive or was he dead? And she said, Daryl was alive. He took care of me. And I said, and that's why you couldn't come to Paracon? She said, yeah. I said, interesting.
And so I went home and I got a hold of my boyfriend and I said, Mom, tell him this. And we're just sitting there giggling because we're watching this change back and forth. We're watching it change back and forth. And we experience things together. And I have friends also that I experience changes with. And I just say, you know, we just have to go with the flow of it. Because I think if we buck it too hard, we move backwards. We go back. And it reminded me of years and years ago when I was younger. I used to listen to a radio show called that Art Bell had on Coast to Coast. When it was Art Bell's show and it was on the middle of the night and you'd listen to it on your radio in the car. And he had a guest that came on that claimed to be a time traveler. And he said that he was moving backwards in time, making small jumps through parallel universes, moving backwards in time. But he was making small jumps through parallel universes.
Gene, huh? Are you talking about
yes.
John Titor? Was that John Titor?
I don't remember his name, but that, I think his name was John, yes.
It was John Titor, yeah, right. Just an incredibly famous person in the paranormal, psychic, weird-as-heck literature. Okay, please go ahead.
Okay, so he was describing how he was traveling through time, space-time travel, going backwards in time, and I believe he was going back to gain some information about a computer system that had been lost, I think, if memory serves. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what he was going back for because I was just fascinated by what he was saying. And he was saying that he was moving back through parallel universes and he had to make small jumps because if he made a big jump, when he was jumping back, making these small jumps to get back to his world, that he knew he would never, ever get back to the exact same world that he left, but he would be able to get back to one that was close enough. And all of that just started making sense to me. All of that started making sense to me. But if we can, and they asked him, I believe they asked him questions about what his technology was, and it was, he never would talk about technology, about how he was using technology. And even when I was thinking of that, listening to it, I was thinking there is no technology. This is purely consciousness, movement through consciousness, through the sheer will of it. And I've always talked about that with people who I would talk to about time travel or space travel, teleportation, moving from one place to another physically without having assistance of anything. I've said, you know, because I had a friend who was really into science and was talking about how you'd have to be really specific about your coordinates because you could materialize in the middle of a wall because the Earth is spinning. And I said, well, I don't think that would be an issue if you were powering this through consciousness alone. You would never think about yourself materializing in the middle of a wall. You would think of yourself materializing standing in the room. And so I don't think that that would be an issue. And we've gone back and forth about that. And I said, you know, I always think that this is going to be something that's unlocked with our consciousness and our sheer willpower of moving energy through the power of thought and intention. And this just seems to be what I believe to be true, that is what is possible. That is what that very famous John who was calling into Art Bell's show talking about this time travel that he was doing through jumping through parallel universes, small jumps at a time, moving backwards so that he didn't get too far off course.
Jen, I've got to tell you something funny. I had apparently at one point the producer of that Art Bell show on my show on Scarycast, and that episode is gone. It is not part of what it is gone from Blog Talk Radio. When I search Art Bell, there is no search result. Because apparently, and also this fellow that was the producer for this producer, he's gone from Facebook. I mean, these folks are gone. It's just amazing. But anyway, thank you for those recollections, and those are wonderful. And I wanted to, here's what I'd like to do. I want to ask our other Valentine, Robin, to talk about the answer to the question, and then I would like to have our three panelists ask you guys a question, and then we're going to say that this might be the world's greatest Valentine episode of Scarycast. So, Robin, do you think that we can kind of believe good events versus bad events? I guess that's the best way to say it. What do you think?
I think that we can. I think we have to realize that sometimes there's others, you know, that come into play, but I definitely think we can. I definitely 100% believe we can time travel. I always have. I think there's been too much evidence to prove otherwise, you know, that we can't. But, yeah, I mean, I think I'm not going to say every single situation or case, but I think there's a large probability that, yeah, you can. When you raise that vibration, when you raise that energy level and you get focused on it in your mind, you know, everybody, years ago, everybody laughed at the fact that people could speak telepathically. We've been told for hundreds of years that it doesn't exist, and it goes on and on. Now
but
more and more
does,
people are doing
and we know that. We know that. Okay, I'm sorry.
Exactly. And so now it's becoming I'm not going to say it's accepted because it really isn't, but more and more people are aware of it, okay? Telekinesis, everybody's found on that. It's a real thing. It is literally a real thing. The power that we have in our mind and in the vibration that we have and in the energy that we have is astronomical if people just know how to use it. You know, and just like Jen said, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yep.
But it really makes a big difference. If you are a person who has a very low energy, and I'm not talking about physical energy and whether or not you can run a mile or whatever. I'm talking about the energy within your body that everybody has. And that vibration, when that's low, bad things happen. It really and truly does. Not only because of your vibration and your energy being low, but it calls in what I call bottom feeders, which are just entities that feed on that gray matter that it creates around you. So when your energy is up and your vibration is up, you take more control of what you want and how you want to do it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. And so now,
can I chime in here?
Thank you for that. And then, so what I'd like to do, since Mark, you're talking, I'd like to go with Mark and with Trey and with Devin in that order for our three co-hosts to ask our Valentines the question that you would love to ask them based on these conversations. So, Mark, what is your question or your comment?
Well, I'd just like to comment first, like whenever I look at these types of subjects, something to do with paranormal, whatever, I like to approach it from a very scientific background. And I know science, we have a lot of these anomalies, right, that we cannot always explain or just beginning to understand. And, you know, as science develops, we understand it more and more. And one thing that I remember distinctly from when I was in university for psychology was this experiment that I was told. I believe it was in my statistics class because, you know, like if you were to do a coin flip, statistically, the coin, you know, it's going to like eventually go 50-50% and more times you do it, right? Well, there was this experiment done that kind of suggests there's precognition. And if we look at memory as not something that's like linear or like due to the past, maybe there's something consciousness that we're tapping into that's nonlinear or like quantum level like we were talking before. But anyway, in this experiment, they had these a bunch of students that they asked to be participants in the research, and they said either you're going to be shown a blank screen or you're going to be shown a very explicit pornographic picture or video, right? And they had to guess which one it was going to be. Well, you would think just like a coin flip, if it's 50-50%, it would be, you know, if you were to graph it out statistically, it would be 50-50%, but it's not. And this was done at Cornell University. It was discovered that 53.1% of the time, they guessed that it was going to be a pornographic picture. Now, what's going on there? Is there something dealing with the, like on an emotional subconscious level, where we actually remember things before they happen? Is there something, because we determined before, memories have a lot to do with emotion and, you know, association and things. Well, if there's something kind of nonlinear and we can pre-memorize things in the future, such as what this experiment's suggesting, it shows, based on statistics, that 53.1% of the time they were getting it dead on. So it shows that there's something more going on here as far as conscious awareness goes and our ability to, you know, almost in a sense, future memorize things. And the one question I want to throw out there based on that is something like deja vu. Like we experience these phenomena, deja vu, where we remember this experience is already happening before, this like,
You know, I experience it all the time, and I just want to throw it out there. How does our guest here explain that? And is there anything kind of supernatural going on with that?
Okay, so we'll ask Robin first, and then Jen.
Okay, I've missed part of it. I'm sorry, because I couldn't hear anything.
Okay.
It blacked out, so I'm sorry.
No worries. The question, though, for you is just like about deja vu, which is kind of like a memory that we've experienced this situation before that we're currently in, right?
Yeah, I think we have multiple planes. Mm-hmm. I think they're all parallel. And I think deja vu is just a matter of we've already experienced it on another plane. It's already happened. That's why it feels familiar. I've had it happen a number of times, I mean, constantly. Even as something as simple as going out into the we have an attached garage, of which I have kennels in, and I have too many pigs and dogs and things out there. And I go out there to get them ready to put them outside for the day, because God forbid anybody be outside. And I'll go to walk down the steps, and it's like, I know I've already been there, already done this. I know what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, who's going to get into what trouble, who's going to do this. And then I'll go to let everybody out, and that's exactly what happens. And it doesn't come in the form of a premonition. It comes in the form that I've already done it. You know, my daughter will come home from work, and it's like, I've already done this before. She's going to come in. This is what she's going to say. This is what's going to happen. And I truly believe that, you know, I mean, I have premonitions all the time, and these aren't premonitions. These feel completely different. But I do believe that there are parallel planes, universes, all of that. And I do believe that while we're going through things on this plane, there is another plane that it's also going through. And I think sometimes they get crossed. And I think that's where the deja vu comes from.
Interesting.
But that's just my opinion.
Okay. Well, thanks. And Jen, what do you think?
I have thought a lot about deja vu and wondered, what the heck is this? But in the moment, like when I have extreme deja vu, it's not just like I know that this, you know, this is familiar. This feels like I've done this before. I've been here before. I have some that are specific, extreme deja vu that literally threw me for a loop. And I had one specific one where I was in this tiny motel in the middle of nowhere. I would have had no reason to ever be there before in my life. And I went into the bathroom, and it was a weird room because it was the bathroom. It had a door, and inside the bathroom was the toilet and the shower. But there was no mirror and no sink. And you had to go outside of the bathroom door to an area where there was a sink and a mirror. And I just remember getting out of the shower and going, I can't see myself. I can't see myself at all. It was the weirdest thing. There was no mirror in here. And so I was literally looking into the towel rack, which was chrome, trying to see if my makeup had run underneath my eyes. And as I was doing that, I remembered doing it before. And it was just strong. I did this before. And I was remembering this room. I know that there's other rooms that have the sink and the mirror outside of the bathroom, but this one was just, the shape of it was like a triangle. The room itself was a triangle. It was just really unique. And I just remember, I've been here before, and I was like, why is this happening? And the sense that I got in that moment of this extreme deja vu, which was quite different, a quite different experience than just a regular deja vu, the feeling that I got intuitively in that moment is that I did it wrong before. I chose wrong before, and I'm trying it again.
Interesting.
That's what it felt like to me.
Okay.
And I think that's different than just a regular deja vu.
Yeah.
Where I do think that our memories from parallels can slip into a merging of what we are too. I think that Robin is on the right track with that.
Yeah, well, I guess okay. I agree with Jen on the severe deja vu. I really do. You know, these are things we've done before. Whether we've got them right or not, we've done them before. And we're doing them again. And I think people that it's of a higher vibration can go, are going back and forth between these planes. You know, some maybe more than others. I mean, because I know I've had that happen. I've gone to do something, and it's like I feel like I'm in a different place, and I'm going through the motions, and then all of a sudden I'm back over to the other one, and I'm back at the beginning to do it all over again.
Interesting.
I've had that happen where I'm driving through the country, and I drive by this mailbox, and this goose is standing there looking at me, and then like a 2 minutes later, I drive by the same mailbox and the same goose, and then a couple minutes later, I drive by it again. And
yeah,
I'm still just going forward.
Yeah. I went to Indiana one time, and from where I was living at to where I was going was a 4.5-hour trip. And I'm driving down the road, and literally 2 hours have gone by, and I'm there. I'm like, okay. I don't know. I went the same way I always did, but it went completely back.
And, you know, this is highly possible because my native elder, he always told me that I could remember what my ancestors knew and that I had to remember what they knew because I needed to do those things again. And he pressured me all the time to remember what I used to know, what my ancestors knew, that I could remember their memories and know what they knew. And he would pressure me, and then he would tell me stories about what my ancestors could do. He said that our tribe, which is up in Minnesota, that we used to trade goods with the people down, the native people down in the American Southwest. The Hopi people specifically were one of them. And he said that my ancestors would take the goods to the Hopi, trade, and then come back. But the way that they would get there was they would walk through the stone and they would just appear there. They were literally teleporting. And he says he didn't use the word teleport, but I was like, are you talking about teleportation? He says literally they would walk through the stone. They would physically travel from one place to another place physically, taking the goods with them, trade the goods. These people didn't know how they got there. They just came with goods. They traded. They were friends. And then they would leave again. Well, there was one instance, he said, where the Hopi were leaving. They were walking away. They were quite a distance. And they went to walk through the stone to come home, and the Hopi turned around to wave goodbye and saw them walk through the stone and disappear. And they still talk about it to this day. And so he was encouraging me to travel physically with thought and intention, and he was pushing me to do it all the time. and you know, he was telling me that my ancestors could do this. It's in my blood. It's in my genetics, that I can do it too. And so all the things that I would remember, that I would experience, he would say, this is part of that. Keep going, keep going. So, I mean, I think that the ancient people have memory of this. And I think the more and more people are open about that, the more they're going to discover. But so many indigenous cultures are so secretive about the things that they know. They're always saying, don't talk about it, don't talk about it. I think it's time to talk about it.
Or discover it ourselves, too. I think that would be meaning.
Yes.
All right. I tell you what, we're getting ready to run out of time, so I want to make sure that Trey and Devin have a chance to ask questions if they can. So our Surgeon General, Dr. Trey, do you have a question for these ladies?
I don't, but I do have an observation. And John, I talked to you about this experience a couple of weeks ago, and I think this is very applicable to this evening. We have discussed things that involve human physiology, biology, our minds, the chemicals in our minds, memories, different physical realities, and a lot of people listening might say, "Wow, this is really woo-woo. This is a lot of stuff that's really out there." But here's my observation. We have a great dog. His name is Timmy. He's a wonderful dog. But in the wintertime especially, he likes to go out and barks at what we call barking at air, because he will go outside, bark, 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 bark. Now, sometimes he will bark and you can hear the bird fly off that he's disturbed. because he doesn't like birds around here. So he barks at the birds. But the couple of weeks ago, he was outside barking, and we looked at each other, my wife and I, and we said he's barking at air again. And some of the neighbors are complaining that Timmy was out barking at air. So he was bark, 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 bark. And so we decided we'd keep him in the evenings. We wouldn't let him outside and bother the neighbors that are trying to go to sleep because he would stay outside. And we did this. We kept him inside, and he would get up, and you could tell he wanted to go out, and you could tell he was growling and carrying on. We said he just wants to go out and bark at the air until we noticed that the beavers had cut down all the trees out in front of our house by the lake. And the moral of that little story is just because we didn't recognize something was going on, namely beavers are out chewing down some trees, Timmy did. He absolutely did. So I think people have different capacities to experience and to understand things that might not be easily explained by others. And I think we ought to keep an open mind about these things on this Valentine's Day. Sometimes we see with our minds, and on Valentine's Day, we often see with our hearts.
I like that.
That is so well put. Thank you, Trey. That's kind of a beautiful thought here on Valentine's Day, see what's in our hearts. So thank you very much.
I love that.
I remember when you told me that about Timmy. Because, like, Timmy knew what was going on. He was trying to do
it. He knew it was something. We didn't. He could detect it. We couldn't. And just because we couldn't didn't mean something didn't exist.
Well, my dogs go outside at night, and they're, you know, out of 7 nights, we have 5 where they just go crazy, and they're, like, flying at the fence. And Pat and I will walk out there. We see absolutely nothing. They're convinced mm-hmm. there's something there. We can't see it. We'll get him in the house and happen to look out the window later, and you see one of the foots walking across the yard. Or we've caught him in the backyard inside the fence. I mean, we didn't see him when they were going crazy, you know. And while I've been sick and laid up in bed, the dogs that are in the bedroom with me at night will be fine 1 minute and go absolutely nuts. And I get up, I don't see anything. Then I'll lay back down, and a few minutes later, I'll see somebody's head looking in the window. Or they'll go over by the window, and I can hear them chanting. And then pretty soon I get the tapping and the knocking on the wall behind my bed
mm-hmm.
from the outside, you know. So it's just because we don't see it doesn't mean it's not there. I mean, look at oxygen. You don't see oxygen, but it's there.
What a great
statement. We hope it's there.
Better be. Hey, Trey, it better be, or are we in trouble? But anyway, thank you so much for that observation and those comments from her. And now, Devin, what do you have to say, to comment, or whatever?
Devin had to go eat.
He had a dinner reservation, so he's no longer with us.
Oh, really? Well, you're correct. So anyway, all I've got to say is thank you to everybody for the most wonderful And you know, it's really funny. I never heard that he said he had a dinner reservation. So I must have been in another parallel universe. So what I'd like to say, I want to thank everyone individually, and then we'll say sayonara. Jen Cruz, thank you so much for being here with us on our Valentine's episode of Steelcast.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye. Thank
you.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
All right, everybody, have a good one. Thank you. Take care.
Bye, John.